In my first lecture on the human-animal bond, I gave an overview of the situation. Tonight, I'm going to talk about our People Pet Partnership Program and the use of animals in social therapy. And for the purposes of the tape, I am Leo Bustin. Is it better if I stand back a little bit? It's chiefly a slide presentation. And I told you the other day that if there's anybody that's hearing handicapped, I'll put on my flashlight onto my lips. My wife has excused me from that tonight, but she is here censoring this. I was very pleased that Larry Rasmussen, in his discussion this morning, which is an outstanding discussion on Genesis, mentioned the letter that Chief Seattle wrote to the President of the United States. And he used these words, which appear as only part of the letter. What is man without beasts? If all the beasts were gone, men would die from great loneliness of spirit, for whatever happens to the beast, beast also happens to man. All things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons of the earth. The only correction I make is it also befalls the daughters of the earth. The principles on which I operate, I already reviewed for you, but for those of you who are new, I have them stated here, and I'll just give you a couple seconds to review them so I can save my voice. All right. Now, I thought that my chief topic tonight is the use of animals in therapy. And here is my therapist, and this is a self-portrait. The human-animal bond is this close relationship that has existed for thousands and thousands of years between animals and people. It's a very important relationship, and it's very strong in many cases. The word bond is very strong, like mother-child bond, where one member of the bond will give its life for another. That's a very strong bond, and that's true with many human-animal relationships. I'm going to give you just a little family history here. When I have been exposed to animals throughout my entire life, except when I was in prison camp. And at that time, I had very little association with animals, either to see them or to eat them, except now and then police dogs were used to herd us about. And that was not a very good bond. My father never gave up really to the mechanical age until he moved to the city when he was very late in life. He always kept animals and always a horse. And whenever our children would come, he would always need to go to the woods to get another load of wood. Although I would go behind the woodshed and see several cords of wood there, he always had to go when the children came. I should point out another thing that in this time, and this is true with most of the old people you'll find in the retirement homes, many of them are from farms, and all their livestock had a name. Our livestock all had a name except the chickens. A few of them had a name. All our cows had a name. And if one of the cows was sick, like if Dolly was sick, we were sick too. And as our children grew, we had animals in our home. This is Susie and her pups and Buzzy. He is now a is now another owner of a black lab. He is now a cardiologist, and the animal is indeed very important to him, probably even more important than it was then because of the stresses of his working position. He was braised upright because he was spent some time on the farm with my father. And there is where he learned the importance of the human-animal bond, which I believe has stood him in good stead. He grew to be very fond of animals from his very young age, and also learned to understand them by his work on the farm. And one of my interesting experiences when I realized how great animal therapy was when I was working in Richland, Washington for the General Electric Company. I was a sheep herder for General Electric Company and also a swine herder. You might be interested to know that when I quit, their stock went up. But I worked with them for 15 years. And I would ride into the far reaches of Hanford Laboratories and return often by bus. I would then jump on my bicycle and ride 2 miles home. I still have this same bicycle. It's a 1950 Raleigh, and I still ride it up and down the hills in Pullman. The hills are getting steeper, though. On this particular day, our son Buzz, who you saw earlier here, was in the first grade, and he was very sick. And just as I was leaving the bus lot this particular day, a friend of mine stopped me, and he, in the back of his car, he had a whole bunch of cats. His wife had put her foot down and says, "We got too many cats, you got to take them to the pound." And he couldn't bear to get rid of all these cats. And he said, "You got animals, but you don't have a cat, and your children needs a cat." And he says, "I'll give you the best one." So the best one is in this paper sack. And so I rode my bike the 2 miles home. I went into our son's room. He was so sick that he didn't even raise his head from the pillow. So all I did was to drop off the sack on his bed. It wasn't long before he was playing with his kitten, and he was back in school the next noon as if nothing ever was wrong with him. This was a miraculous cure. I suppose he had to go there to tell him about his kitten and then to bring a crowd home that evening. He also had a lot of laughs. This is my wife. She was even beautiful when she was younger. That's a paid political announcement. No. And here you see a dog. It isn't a very good picture of a dog, and also her cat, Dizzy Lizzy. If you think you're going crazy, you can do two things. You can either carry around a dog, which was the old prescription by the medieval physicians, or you can get a half Siamese cat, and they're so crazy that no matter how crazy you are, you seem sane compared with them. Here is a more recent picture of the chief, that's what I call my wife, and her dog. She complained a great deal about me being gone so much when I was at the University of California. So I got her this dog, and she wondered what we should call it. And I said, "We'll call it Great Reluctance, so that whenever I leave her, I can leave her with great reluctance." And so she threw the waffle iron at me. No, that really isn't true. She has never thrown anything at me. And here is another picture. I showed this the other day too, but this needs a little of explanation. The chief drives a Volkswagen Rabbit, and she's in this Rabbit, and the caption says, with me carrying great reluctance, it's great reluctance is 16 years old, but it still loves to chase cars. This is the chief's most recent dog, and you'll all be introduced to it. I think we're scheduled on a forum on Thursday night to talk about hearing handicapped, because 2.5 years ago, I came home and my wife could no longer hear me. She had this dog. She didn't want another dog that would be a hearing dog. She couldn't part with this dog, which she calls Bridget and I call Dingbat. And so we decided to train the dog to be a hearing dog. And now, after intensive training, this dog, which will soon be 6 years old, is a certified hearing dog, which you have to come to the forum on Thursday night to hear about. Oh, another thing that has disturbed me very greatly. I have visited retirement homes and nursing homes for many decades. I visit them far more frequently now because that's where most of my girlfriends are. Most of my old girlfriends are in nursing homes and convalescent homes. But even 2 decades ago, when I would go to some of these homes, I was very disturbed to find many people who were just waiting to die. They were dying from the worst disease today, which is loneliness. There was nothing for them to live for. Many of them had been separated from the only thing that gave them unconditional love, needed them, and ordered their life, gave them unconditional love, and gave them security. And that was a pet. Many of them were living alone with their pet, which was the most important thing to them. I have seen people in retirement homes and convalescent homes who are in pathologic grief because of this separation, because of this fracturing of the bond. You can make fun of it. You can say, well, they're just losing their marbles, but you'll be wrong. It's very real. In fact, the grief that's suffered by many people when they lose their, when they live alone and they lose their animal, which with which they have a close association, a very strong bond, the grief is very similar to that when you lose a child. And I can tell you firsthand, that's a very terrible grief indeed. I won't give you all the history of this, but this was the placement of the first hearing dog in the Northwest. It was for Mrs. Christensen in Gig Harbor. The dog's name is Ranger. And on Thursday night, I'll tell you about this. This dog was very important to her because it was her ears. But the one thing that I want to tell you about it is that when she saw us to the door after a very pleasant visit, she turned to me and she said, as important as it was for me to have a hearing dog, it was even more important for me to have this companion. I'll never forget that, and I hope you don't either. I was also impressed not only how what guide dogs do to the blind, what hearing dogs do for the deaf, but what other animals mean to people who are handicapped, like Bob here, who we hired because I wanted my associates to learn to know a person as a friend who is wheelchair bound, who is paraplegic. He was quadriplegic and then paraplegic. We employed him, and he was very useful, not only to our College of Veterinary Medicine, but also in educating the students and the faculty of what it means to live in a wheelchair and to always be in pain. His dog was very important to him. I was also depressed by the number of advertisements in the paper for houses for rent, and so many of them had no pets. No pets. No pets. Now, I don't blame some of the people for this, because some of the animals are not well trained. Many people raise their animals to be juvenile delinquents. They deposit used dog feed over the premises indiscriminately. They wake up the whole neighborhood at 2 a.m. and they eat up the rugs, they bite the postman or anybody else that they don't think ought to be around. Another thing that has depressed me was when I came back to Washington State University after I left the University of California. I found that many students would take animals. They'd pick up animals in the fall, and they would keep them through the year, and when they left, they would leave their animals behind them. They would love them and leave them. I thought that was a very terrible thing indeed. In looking at surveys over the United States, there was a very comprehensive one done in 1975. On an average over this last decade, I guess we have killed in our animal control centers throughout the United States about 15 million dogs and cats. 80% of them were owned by people. Up to 50% of them had behavioral problems, many of which could have been remedied. That's a lot of blood on the floor. We have an overpopulation problem in many pets. We're raising them indiscriminately without realizing the impact of it. And they've gotten to be throwaway items. We are regarding our animals as throwaway items. And we don't raise them right, as I say. Sometimes they run us, and that isn't the way it's supposed to be. We don't train them properly. They can't even hit the fire plug. That was entitled Man's Best Friend, if you missed it. My wife and I also noticed that when we took great reluctance to the convalescent home in Pullman, they really didn't want us to bring it there because they said people would trip over it. So we carried it in, and they didn't like that either, because they just didn't like animals, except the people there liked animals. And when we had the dog in our arms, they'd come and want to pet the dog. They didn't particularly care about me, but they sure wanted to pet the dog. And here you see one of them. And about 8 years ago, in a class in veterinary medicine, we placed some cats in a nursing home in Moscow, Idaho, which is only 8 miles from Washington State University. It is the home of the University of Idaho. And this home has never been the same since. They still have one of the cats there. It's called Geriatrics, and it really is, because it's quite old now. When we gave them these kittens, as some of these cats do, some of them are females, and they get pregnant, and then they had kittens, and then the party became really informal. And it's changed the whole tenor of that home for the better, I might add. I have recorded some of the early history of the human-animal bond in this book. And my associate, Linda Hines, who is on the right, and I developed a program we call the People Pet Partnership Program. And that's now what I'm going to tell you about. You see Dingbat there in the middle? And my friend Alma is on the left. She has her 88th birthday this month. She periodically writes me very long letters about her insight into animals, and she has a remarkable insight into them. She's only been through high school, but all her letters are grammatically absolutely correct, and all the words are spelled properly. Here's the People Pet Partnership, and it's appropriate that I use this lady. Had I gone to visit this lady on an ordinary day, she wouldn't have given me the time of day. But when we brought this dog to her, she reminisced about her dog for an extended period of time. She was completely a different person in the presence of an animal. And it is very healthy for people to reminisce. Those who are most mentally alert and healthy are those who reminisce. And one of the greatest stimulators for reminiscence is an animal. The first part of our program is called the Public-Private School Partnership. This involves our students and other students and some members of the community going into the school system on an approved program. In fact, it's the most popular program in the school system of our region. And we discuss various issues of responsible pet care. We also have a laying on of hands. And when you have a big dog, you can have about five on one dog, and that's cost effective. I have a lot of favorite audiences, but I must admit to you that kindergarten and first grade are my favorite audiences. They are really enthusiastic listeners, even for a guinea pig. Here is our program. We go into we took a chapter out of the Catholic Church. You get them when they're young, and then you got them. So we go in, what is a pet? Choosing a pet, little critters as pets, cats as pets, dogs as pets, non-pet animals, and responsibilities of pet ownership. It's very good for our students, and it's also good for the children. And my hope is that the students who do this will continue this in whatever community they move to. And pretty soon we'll change the world. For the better, I might add. And one of the reasons we do this and introduce children to these animals is because of what R. Joseph said many years ago. One of the big rewards of having loved dogs all your life is the fact that you will be spared a lonely old age as a result of your continuing affection. I can extend this also to cats. And the reason that this is so important, I know many people who are living alone today who would greatly benefit by an animal association. But because they haven't had an animal association when they were young, it's a very hard sell. Our second program is called a Companion Animal Partnership. And this involves visiting nursing and convalescent and retirement homes with animals, an assortment of them in day room, or taking an animal to an old person who is bound to his or her bed. And in this case, I want our students to learn to know an old person as a person. So many people today, the youngsters are separated from the oldsters and thereby lose a great deal of wisdom and knowledge and friendship of old and wise people. So many of our students now take their animals on a routine basis to visit certain people in the retirement home. And the students enjoy it, the animals enjoy it, and the recipients of the visit also enjoy it. We have also set up therapy rooms. This is a therapy room in a local convalescent home which denied us originally having animals in there. Two women bought the convalescent home, and then things began to change. And this was a case where we said, why don't we set up one room and we'll put Handsome the cat in it. It's a Persian cat. And then the staff could decide who would benefit most from this therapy room. And they all voted on Marie, because Marie had had a stroke, and she didn't care whether school kept or not. She just laid in her bed in a fetal position and just was waiting to die. And there was another problem that she had. She kept scratching her legs, and she had big sores on her legs, and they had tried all kinds of therapy, and none of it worked. So she was moved in with Handsome the cat. Now, for those of you who know cats, you know that if you start scratching, the cat jumps on your hand and she thinks you're playing. And that's what happened to Marie. Every time she'd go to scratch her legs, the cat would jump on her hand. And then she'd start playing with the cat. And in 5 weeks, her sores were all healed up. Now, this room full of, if you were all physicians, you couldn't have accomplished that with all the medicines in the world. But we did it very cheaply and very effectively. But another very important thing happened to Marie. She was socialized because people came to visit the cat, and then she was socialized because she became more attractive. And in 2 months, you wouldn't have known this was the same person. In fact, she was on television. And to show you, you see, one of my big concerns in placement of animals in therapy, because among other things, I'm a veterinarian, and my charter is to protect the animals. You see, it isn't fair to put an animal with a dingy person and end up with a dingy animal. So I have to choose these animals carefully, and I have to protect them. We also look after these animals. And Handsome the cat is very fond of Daisy, this dog. So Elner, who owns Daisy the dog, brings Daisy by to see Handsome the cat. So this is a visit, and they'll be playing in a little while. Daisy is a very interesting dog. Elner carries Daisy around in a basket, so we call Daisy a basket case. This is one of our more recent placements. This is a very interesting case because a physician in Pullman wrote a prescription for Walter. And the prescription was that Walter should have a dog. That's the only thing that he knew might change Walter's attitude, because Walter didn't even want to see his grandchildren. He just wanted to be left alone to die. And so his physician wrote this prescription. So the convalescent home called up the People Pet Partnership and said, we need a dog for Walter. So our associate, Terry Ryan, who also trained our dog, set about to find the right dog. We went through 8 dogs before we found Boof. This dog is named Boof. It doesn't look like his head belongs to his body, but it does. And Walter was bound to his bed, but we changed the architecture. You see, today, architects and planners build buildings for those of you and me who walked in here tonight. They don't really build them for real old people, or for handicapped people, or for animals. We're changing that. When I get to be dictator, they're going to change that very fast. We have already changed it here. You see, Boof has an outside run, and there's a hole in the wall now where he comes in and out, because Walter can't let him in and out, so Boof, he can go in and out like he wants to. And the convalescent home had no hesitation to make this arrangement for Booth. So this changed Walter's whole attitude. So he was much happier for the last weeks of his life before he died. And then we moved 300 pounds of lovable protoplasm in this same room. And she just loves old Booth. And old Booth thinks, well, I know he knows he's in heaven. In fact, if he died now, he'd already realize that he'd been in heaven before he died. And he's doing this lady a lot of good because she has no family around this area. Another thing that we have done, I took this chapter from St. Christopher's Hospice in London. One of the great persons of the world is Dame Cicely Saunders, who refers to me as the animal man. She has some animals in her hospice that are resident animals, but she allows visiting privileges to other animals. And here you see one of the animals is visiting his master. Another thing that we are doing, I am working as a consultant to the Prince and Princess of Wales Hospice in Glasgow, Scotland. Dr. Mary Stewart, who's a veterinarian at Glasgow, and I, we're very good friends, and we're working with the gerontologist there, who is an internationally known gerontologist, a lady, and we hope that they will build their facilities so that people coming there who are terminally ill may bring their animals with them. And I think before another decade, and if I am blessed with 10 more years, I hope to be here to see it, that we'll have many hospitals who will have wards where the people can bring their pet with them. It worked for Albert Schweitzer, and it can work for us to good effect. We have placed some very specially selected cats with terminally ill people. One of the worst things that can happen to you is to die alone. And for some people, a very carefully selected cat purring on your breast and a warm body to touch is very comforting indeed. We know from physiological studies that it reduces anxiety and lowers your blood pressure. As a result of our extensive experience, we have put out, I guess, what are the first comprehensive guidelines for nursing homes. This has already been utilized by the Tacoma Lutheran Home, which is one of the finest homes that I know about. And they are setting up an animal therapy program, which we spent 2.5 days evaluating and then recommending what they should do. I think it will be highly successful. We also have initiated a prison partnership. I spent some time in prison as a prisoner of war. I know what it is to have the gate closed behind you for which you do not have a key. So I have a certain empathy for those who are locked up. I have befriended a number of people, and one of them is a woman who is often in trouble and who is psychologically traumatized due to having been incarcerated 35 times in 14 different institutions. Her name is Kathy. I encouraged her, although she doesn't use a wheelchair, to use a wheelchair to train her dogs. This is her dog, Aaron. She can train a dog to do almost anything. And she has done that. This dog will deliver to her a hammer, a blanket, pills, even glasses, or deliver a letter to her mouth. And she came, we had talked a great deal about what we could do for prisoners, and I was trying to get into a prison in Western Washington. She was very interested in a women's prison. And she says, why don't we go into the Purdy Treatment Center for Women, where it's a maximum security facility, and we'll get some good dog trainers, and we'll train these prisoners how to train animals to help handicapped people. So I and Linda Hines and others worked with her. We got the permission from Sue Clark, who is the enlightened manager of Purdy Treatment Center for Women. And we started a pilot program. It was so successful, and the publicity from it ended up having an unnamed donor give us a kennel. He or she gave the money for a kennel worth about $25,000, I think. We will be dedicating this. I'll be there at the dedication ceremony next Monday, just a week from today at 1:30. It's going to be a historic event. And here are some of the prisoners and the trainers with the dogs. They go through regular obedience training, and they also learn about grooming. It's a course given by the Tacoma Community College, so they get credit for it. I'll only introduce you to one of them. This is Sue. I am an acquaintance of Sue. If she was here tonight, she would find her a hail person well met. What you wouldn't know is that she's a contract killer, and she's in for life, except that she may get out in about 12 or 14 years. Her husband is also a killer, but he's out now. Now, Sue trained the first dog, and she knew who the dog was for because she met Bert Push, who shuffles along on a prosthesis with for his feet. He has only sort of digits that are not hands like you and I have. He's very short. He's in charge of the Independent Living Center in Puyallup, Washington. He can drive a car, but he needed a dog that when he falls down, he could lean on so he could get back up. He needed something that would pick up things that he dropped and pick up the phone and also open a sliding door, which he has trouble with. Sue had met him, and she knew that's who she was going to train a dog for. And there's a great advantage to this, you see, because the dog doesn't know Sue's record. So the dog accepts her, as very few would, and without questioning. So this was very therapeutic for Sue, and now Bert has the dog, and it's, as far as I know, it's worked out very well. I don't have time to tell you about several other prisons that I am familiar with. I was just in Australia helping to outline a program in one of their finest prisons. It's the finest prison I've ever been in. I told them if I ever had to go back to prison, that's where I'd like to go. It's at Collingvale in Perth. I have been working with the people at Lorton Prison in Washington, D.C., and one of our associates in Delta Society is David Lee, who set up the program at Lima State Prison in Ohio, which has been a very successful program for the criminally insane. It's changed the whole tenor of the wards in which these animals are. I could spend the next half hour telling you about some of the remarkable things that have happened, but we don't have time for that now. Another program is the Partnership in Equine Therapy and Education. I could make you cry telling you about some of the remarkable miracles that have occurred by people, by disadvantaged and handicapped people riding horses. We started, I guess, the first one associated with any university. We feel that's where it belongs. We are having a real struggle because it's a very costly enterprise. There are many riding for the handicap programs in the United States. The more advanced ones are in England and in Germany. They first started in Scandinavia and England. And with the polio, when so many polio victims, they went through all kinds of exercises and physical therapy for the polio victims, but nothing really happened. So somebody that was wise decided to put him on the horse and go through similar exercises and find out that they were remarkably improved. I visited the biggest riding for the handicap programs in the world. The largest one is south of London. They have over 700 people who ride there every week. It's on the grounds of St. Mary's Hospital for Children. And I'll tell you about one of the stories from there. If you have been in a wheelchair looking up all your life and you're suddenly vaulted onto a horse looking down, it changes your whole attitude on life, but it also is very good therapy physiologically. And you're able to go places where you have never been before in a wheelchair. This has great significance to many people. It's not only for young, but it's for old people. Like this man who is a retarded person, he was also worked in my wife's garden. He's over 70 years old. And probably one of the best weeks of his life was the week he spent in riding camp in our program. And this is one of, I'm going back to Bethel. I told you a little bit about Bethel in Bielefeld, Germany, which is the most remarkable place I've ever been in my life. And they have a large stadium where they ride for all their handicapped. And they have found epileptics like this person is greatly benefited by riding, because it improves their balance, among other things. It also influences their attitude. And back to the Diamond Center for the Handicapped in St. Mary's Hospital in near London. This is a drawing of a girl who was 12 years old and had cancer. When she could no longer ride her horse, when she was feeling all right, or feeling passable at least, she would call up Diamond Center for the Handicapped and they would bring over her favorite horse. And she was on the ground floor so that the horse could stick his head through the window of the hospital, and she would feed the horse and talk to it. And it was very meaningful to her in her last days. Now, animal selection is critically important. On hearing me tonight, some of you may be tempted to say, oh, we got an old people's home or a nursing home in our hometown. I'll just run down and pick out a cute little animal at the animal pound, and I'll run it by the nursing home and say, here, your troubles are over. I'm here to tell you that your troubles are just starting. You can set the program back 10 years doing that. You have to do this very carefully. Many people think of dogs and cats as the principal objective for this. Earlier I showed you a guinea pig. Some guinea pigs and other animals are becoming more and more popular and are as meaningful to some people as a dog or a cat. I should also point out, as I told some of you the other day, with cats, they are not as big a problem because you can train them on the potty chair. In fact, there are kits now that you can get. But I want to caution you. This is Spook. He belongs to Dr. Zeglin, who is an associate of mine. And she trained him. But she did not train him to flush. Because if you train a cat to flush, they love to flush. And they'll run your water bill way up, so you'll have to put a timer on it. Birds, pigeons, as we found out here and a lot of other places, are very therapeutic. Those of you who are from Portland may recognize Orman, who was a pigeon, a crippled pigeon in the park system of Portland. It was the most checked out item in the Portland park system. And whenever the handicapped person would come out and play the piano for the dancers, Orman would get up on the piano and he'd also dance, making up his own steps. Other birds are also very useful, and to many people, that's the best recommendation we can make, to have a bird that can sing or a budgie that can talk. It has been very meaningful for many people. Fish are also very good. This man spends 3 to 4 hours a day watching these fish, and it lowers his blood pressure. We know that's physiologically true. This is a very beautiful story. This girl was a 4-H member in Dillon, Montana, in downtown Dillon, Montana. But she didn't have she wanted to raise a lamb as a 4-H project, but she didn't have any room. So she found that the nursing home in Dillon, Montana, in uptown Dillon, Montana, had a lot of room. So she got permission to raise her sheep there. Well, if you know Dillon, Montana, who's in that nursing home? It's full of retired sheep herders. And she got to know more sheep herders and more about sheep than probably she ever bargained for. And so it was a great therapy, because the best therapy for older people are animals and children. And this was a winning combination. And she had a prize sheep. And there was a fellow from Australia, a cattleman, that heard about this. So he bid the highest for the sheep and gave it back to the nursing home. So that's another thing I'm going to do when I get to be dictator. This is from Tiger Mountain near Issaquah, Washington. And this fellow wrote and told me about this. This was his pet for 32 years. This Jersey cow died at 32. That's longer than most people are married. And you better believe that was a strong bond. And he cried when she died. So don't knock it. What I do recommend against are exotic pets. A lot of children would like to have an elephant for a pet or a non-human primate. I strongly recommend against that. Or wild animals such as raccoons. They belong out in the forest and not in the home. You do not do anyone a favor by having them as pets. And if you're in doubt, dachshunds are ideal dogs for small children, as they are already stretched and pulled to such a length that the child cannot do much harm one way or another. Of a truth, though, there are many better dogs. I hate to say this if there's some dachshund breeders here, but for some children and some old people, there may be some better selection than a dachshund. This is a very interesting selection here. This dog was brought to a home for juvenile delinquent girls. And they said, this dog is in trouble. It has been beaten, mistreated, unloved, and starved. And it is up to you girls to socialize it and to love it and to get it back into society. Well, there wasn't a girl there that didn't recognize in that dog what had happened to her. And socialize it they did. And this dog was brought back, and they themselves were greatly benefited by the experience. I wonder what time it is. I can't... And I want you to be aware, when people have working dogs such as this guide dog, you never disturb a guide dog in harness. And don't ever forget that. You don't call them by name, and you don't go and pet it. They're working dogs, and you leave them alone. This is an interesting case, and it's to make a point. This happens to be a former patient of our son, who has lived about 200 miles away. There's a lot of people today who are like this man. He happened to come to see our son, who's a cardiologist. But he didn't have long to stay because he was afraid that the wolves would eat his dog, Lady, and then he too would die, because it was the most important thing in his life. There are many people like that who will refuse to go to a doctor or a hospital because there's no one to take care of their animals. And the hospitals don't make provisions for this. I am on a big campaign from London to Melbourne to Perth to try to get all hospital admission forms to include three questions. Do you live alone? Do you own a pet or pets? And who should take care of them if you are in hospitalized or in emergency? I can give you all kinds of sad stories about what has happened, because a person in an accident brought to the hospital is a poor risk if they're still mentating and they have animals that aren't taken care of. And I'm worried about the animals too, that they are not taken care of. And we don't prepare for emergencies. We take care of emergencies for people, but not for the animals. And I can give you all kinds of stories about that. So I hope that Many of you will be leaders in your own community. When you set up emergency plans, you also include the animals, because for many people, they are members of the family. And on your front window, you should have a sign that says, for the firemen, if they should come, they'll know that there are so many animals inside the house, because firemen usually get the people out, but they forget about the animals. And also that I hope you'd join me in getting legislation through that will permit animals under certain circumstances in government housing and in nursing homes. Minnesota has led the way in this. They do allow animals in nursing homes. California recently has legislation. Now more and more states are doing that. And that's the only civil thing to do. I believe that people that don't wish access to animals have that right. But for equality's sake, those people who want access to animals should also have that right. And I feel in many more situations than are present that an animal's presence will change the whole milieu of the situation. For a while in our counseling center at the university, a lady used a dog there, and it changed the whole attitude of the people she was counseling. And periodically the dog would go out into the waiting room. I won't ask for a show of hands of how many who have been to a counseling room in a university, but the people are usually sitting there and kind of looking through the corner of their eye, wondering what's wrong with the next person sitting next to them. But there's very little conversation. But when the dog appeared, then everybody'd start talking. And so in many situations, I am recommending an animal. It changes the whole picture. The Delta Society of North America, which has just set up its offices in the greater Seattle area, and Linda Hines, who's a member of our science committee here, is the first executive director. And it's associated with an international organization that is promoting investigations relating to the human-animal bond and the utilization of this great form of therapy, and keeping track of programs and the literature for it. We hope that more and more data will be generated so that more and more people will be writing prescriptions. Quite a few physicians are now writing prescriptions. For example, orthopedists writing prescriptions for riding for the handicapped and that type of thing. It's nice having someone waiting for you when you get home. And I got this autograph thing from Jim Davis. And you really miss something if you don't have this. And the chief and I have this. Every time I come home, I have somebody waiting for me. And even if I came home 5 hours late from feeding that animal, it wouldn't bite me when I came home. It would welcome me even more than if I had come home on time. I don't know very many people who work that way. And what I'm making a plea for tonight is also to have a reverence for life, that you take killing very seriously, and that animals are not throwaway items, but they're very dear to me and to the one who created them. And you must take killing seriously. And my program at Washington State University is that we train our people not only to have capable hands, but to have gentle words and caring, compassionate hearts. And I wish the same also for you. And that's the dogma for today.